Thanks for listening to The 21st. I'm Julian Haida. When you think of crustaceans, what comes to mind? We humans know them mostly by the role they play in our mealtimes, like lobsters, crabs, and shrimp. But did you know that these are arthropods that are close relatives of insects? For 37 years, the Insect Fear Film Festival in Urbana has featured different kinds of insects and related critters, and crustaceans will be front and center at this year's event. WILL reporter Christine Herman spoke with the film festival's founder, University of Illinois entomologist May Barenbaum, about this year's theme.
For a long time, zoologists, including entomologists, assumed that the closest allies to insects were the arachnids, the spiders and mites and ticks and scorpions and their relatives. But it turns out, starting about 15 years ago, people began using molecular data, particularly genomic data, to look at the various groups of arthropods and came to the unmistakable realization that, in fact, the main reason that insects and arachnids look like they're closely related is that they're terrestrial. And in reality, if you look down at the gene level, insects are basically just terrestrial crustaceans.
Interesting.
They diversified wildly once they got onto land. Just to illustrate how successful the insect plan is for life on terrestrial Earth, there are about a million species of described insects, and the estimate of how many are yet to be described as upwards of 4-5 million. So maybe as many as 5.5 million or more. Some estimate as many as 30 million. By contrast, the number of known crustaceans is like 70,000. And there are a couple of families of insects that are bigger than that. There's longhorn beetles. There's like 30,000 species of longhorn beetles.
Wow.
But the crustaceans have really diversified within an aquatic context. The one place on the planet that you won't find in many insects at all is the deep ocean. Marine insects are pretty much limited to living on the top of the water, like ocean striders or, you know, like water striders, but in the ocean, or along the coastal areas. And it's thought that crustaceans are far older, according to the fossil record, than insects are. And maybe one reason insects are not well represented in marine environments is that crustaceans got there first. And they've done very well there. And, of course, they've also, there are crustaceans in terrestrial habitats, but they really have been successful in the marine environment.
Well, this is all really fascinating because I think for most people, when they think of crustacean or crabs, lobster, shrimp, crayfish, they don't necessarily realize that they're this closely related to insects. So that's fascinating. Why are crustaceans important? Or can you talk a little bit about the role they play within the ecosystems in which they live? And I understand this is outside of your expertise as an entomologist.
Reason we find a theme for the festival every year is sort of focus a message and have not repeat the same. I think at this point, probably everyone who's been living in Champaign-Urbana for any length of time can explain to you why insects cannot be the size of mobile homes. So we've done that. We explain, you know, what are the constraints on insects in general in terms of growing big. But focusing on a particular aspect of arthropod life helps people learn new things. And this year, it's helping entomologists learn new things.
Sure.
I have to confess, I'm pretty ignorant about crustaceans. I have been, like, cramming to master enough so I sound at least a little bit credible. In fact, as you know, when I came into the studio, I was just double-checking to make sure that, in fact, a scientist who specializes on crustaceans is called a carcinologist, and I wanted to make sure that wasn't just an individual who studies crabs, because Carcinus is a genus of crabs. It is. But don't ask Siri, because then she will tell you the name of allergists in Carson City, Nevada. So we're learning along with the general public. In terms of their importance to humans, well, what most people immediately think of when you say crustacean is they're delicious. And in fact, we eat about 8 million tons of crustaceans every year. And, you know, mostly shrimp, lobsters, crabs, their relatives. But in terms of their role in ecosystems, probably most marine food webs are based on crustaceans in the form of krill. And krill constitute a group of crustaceans, very small, that are staples for so many marine organisms. Hmm. So just like in terrestrial food webs, insects are kind of near the bottom. Same thing in marine ecosystems, although there are very large crustaceans that are at tops of food webs. In fact, it's astonishing how large the largest crustaceans are.
How large are they?
Okay. I'm so glad you asked that question. You know, entomologists have a range of orders of magnitude they're used to dealing with, but the span is probably definitely greater for crustaceans. The very smallest crustacean is less than a tenth of a millimeter, which is 4/1,000th of an inch. And this is a tiny little parasitic crustacean that is a parasite on a tiny little aquatic crustacean called a copepod. The very largest is the Japanese spider crab, which is a marine crab from Japan, and its leg span is about 12 and a half feet. It weighs over 40 pounds.
Wow.
A lot of crab legs. It's like a buffet all by itself.
That's amazing.
So that's when people think of crustaceans, they think of dinner, not so much insects.
at least not in the U.S.
Right, at least not, definitely not in the U.S. And I think humans have arguably longer history eating insects, but there are ancient records of crustacean meals that go back to 164,000 years ago.
Wow.
So we've not only do we eat a lot of them, we've been doing it for a very long time.
Hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the films that you've got lined up. So the first, it's a kid-friendly anthology of crustaceans in TV and film. So that's like to start off the festival, it's like kid-friendly.
Very kid-friendly.
Yeah.
And frankly, our first feature, which is from the 50s, 1957, very unlikely to scare anybody.
Okay. Actually, I wanted to play a little clip from the trailer for The Attack of the Crab Monsters. It's a feature-length film from 1957. Let's take a listen.
On an isolated Pacific island, the Navy lands a party of daring scientists to solve the mysterious disappearance of an entire atomic research team. Strange horror strikes first at the plane that brought them. And then, earth-shattering tremors begin tearing the island to shreds.
Okay, Professor, how are the crabs blowing up the island?
I am not sure, but imagine they are able to send out arcs of heat. They are pecked with it.
I'm speaking with May Barenbaum, U of I entomologist and one of the lead organizers of this event. May, can you talk a little bit about why you chose this particular film?
Attack of the Crab Monsters was an easy choice. Usually we like our first feature to be at least family-friendly, and the movies from the 50s are before, I guess, gore was featured and plot lines made a difference. This is kind of a very derivative in that this was the era of the, you know, atomic radiation-induced giant creatures. So there's atomic testing in the Pacific, and a consequence is that there are now giant crabs, although just a couple of them, but they seem to have loose electrons. Bullets pass through them, so it's hard to take a sample. And they are able to absorb the electron energy of other creatures, including humans, and somehow that confers upon them the ability to speak in the voices of these other humans. They need to get off the island before the crabs outwit them. The problem with making crabs the bad guys is that they're sort of endearing. That walking sideways thing is really cute.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many cartoons about crabs. These are not sort of designed to be cute. And in fact, in reality, there are many invasive species of crabs that do massive damage to coastal ecosystems. Hmm. But in general, people feel favorably disposed toward them. So this is an unusual role for setting up a conflict between humans and the crustacean world.
And then what about the second film? It's called The Bay, and I understand it's based in a small Maryland town. Chaos breaks out after an ecological disaster. What is this one all about?
So this is actually a much higher quality movie than we're accustomed to showing, but I thought it would be a great choice because it is one of the more obscure groups of crustaceans. This features an isopod. Most familiar isopods to people are pill bugs or sow bugs, roly-polies. This is not a roly-poly here. This is a marine isopod, the biology of which is based on an actual crustacean, Cymathoa exigua. This is called the tongue-eating louse, is its common name. And this is a species that is a parasite of red snapper fish. And what it does is basically enters the fish's mouth, consumes the fish's tongue, latches onto the stump of the tongue, and then becomes the fish's tongue for the rest of that fish's life. This is real.
Wow. Definitely sounds more like something out of sci-fi, but that's
it. Well, it
happens.
Worked its way into sci-fi.
Yeah.
Barry Levinson, the director, who has a lot of legitimate credits to his name, Good Morning Vietnam, Rain Man, I mean, he's the legitimate Hollywood director, was asked about whether he'd be interested in making a documentary about pollution in Chesapeake Bay. There are a lot of chicken farms, chicken excrement gets in, human waste, and it has created sort of a biological desert. 40% of the estuary is dead. And he knew that there was already a Frontline documentary about the state of the Chesapeake Bay, and no one really cared. And he thought maybe people would care more if we did some more creative storytelling. So he took the concept of the documentary, is that the water is very polluted. There's many chemicals. It's inimical to normal life. And then sort of put a twist on it where these isopods move away from their red snapper hosts. That's not part of the film, but they start on a 4th of July festival, which features, by the way, a Miss Crustacean contest and a crab-eating competition. The isopods start eating humans, particularly ripping out their tongues, and it's very gory. And
It's rated R, yeah.
It's rated R, yes. Don't bring your kids. It's sort of a found footage approach where, in reality, a lot of it was improvised and some of it was shot on cell phones, just like you might, you know, that's the sort of footage you would cobble together to do a found footage documentary. It was just so apt, you know, that film alone, a chance to show this film and talk about this very strange crustacean, pretty much justifies a crustacean fear film festival.
So there's also a live insect crustacean petting zoo. What kinds of creatures can people expect to meet there?
Well, that's one of the really distinctive features of this year's festival. We have, in addition to our usual menagerie of six-legged creatures, we have creatures with many more legs. In fact, a crab, lobster, they're in a group called the decapods, which means 10 legs. And there are crustaceans with even more. We have, among the decapods, we will have vampire crabs. We're going to have blue crabs and spider crabs. We have cherry shrimp, clam shrimp, fairy shrimp. We'll have live crayfish, a whole diversity of isopods in honor of the stars of our second feature, including one species that's tangerine orange. And we have triops, which are small crustaceans that are pretty similar to what was around about 400 million years ago, a really ancient life form.
Yeah.
They're called triops because they have three eyes. There are so many strange things about
crustaceans. And this is a petting zoo, so at least some of these are safe to touch?
Yes, and be prepared to get your hands wet, right? Because they're aquatic, so.
Can we talk a little bit about, I mean, you've been doing this for 37 years. What is your big goal for doing this event all these years?
I guess the main goal of the festival is to help people understand the value and the fascination of biodiversity. And if any phylum sort of embodies biodiversity, it's the arthropods. When you say insect, to most people, they think of pests like mosquitoes. Sometimes they think of ticks, which is not an insect. You know, ticks are not an insect, or spiders, which are not insects. So it's just to share with the public our fascination for the astonishingly diverse variety of ways they've found to make a living on this planet. The best thing I've always thought about being an entomologist is that there's free entertainment almost year-round. I mean, things are slow right now, but, you can go in your backyard. You don't have to go to, you know, a rainforest. You don't have to climb to the peaks of the highest mountains. They're everywhere. And our lives intersect with them, whether you like it or not.
Well, it's always fun to talk with you, May. May Berenbaum is professor and head of the entomology department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She's also been leading a big team of people in putting on the Insect Fear Film Festival every year for 37 years now. Thanks for being here, May.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
For those of you listening from East Central Illinois, the 37th annual Insect Fear Film Festival kicks off this Saturday at 6 p.m. at the Follinger Auditorium. We'll tweet out more information if you follow us at 21STShow. That's all the time we have for the show today. I'm Julian Haida. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thank you so much for listening.